Hello, animation fans, and welcome to another iAnimate podcast. I'm your host, Larry Vasquez, and you're listening to episode 101. In this episode, we have India Barnado joining us. India has been one of our past students, as well as guests in the podcast, but it was neat to be able to catch up with her and see where she's been up to. She's recently released her own direct short film, Cat and Moth, and since then, she's worked on such films as The Sea Beast, The Willoughbys, and Across the Spider-Verse. So it was just a neat opportunity to get her in one-on-one and talk with her where she's been and what she's been up to. Check it out. Awesome. Awesome. So good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Yeah.
Thanks for joining on the podcast. It's been a bit.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's I know you messaged me a while ago, and I was like, great, I must remember to email Larry.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've been through one of these before with Martin and Ted. I think that was a while ago, back in yeah. I'd probably have to look at your LinkedIn when you were over at L'Atelier.
Yeah, maybe 2015.
Okay. All right. Well, I always again like to thank my guests. So thank you so much for taking the time. I know trying to get this coordinated already here recently was a little bit tricky. It sounds like you're busy, so that's a good thing. Yeah. So thank you for taking some time with us.
Oh, and thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having me. And yeah, I'm excited.
All right. I love hearing the accent again, though.
I get that a lot.
So, you know, as I mentioned before, it's been a bit since we've had you on the podcast. Now it's one-on-one. What has, you know, that was back in 2015. I think you mentioned here you were 2014. You were took some workshops with us at iAnimate, jumped into L'Atelier with Ted and Martin. Yeah. It's been a long time since then. So what have you been up to since then?
Oh, that's been a while. So yeah, I worked at L'Atelier. We finished Ballerina. And then I started work, I was taking Cat and Moth more seriously at that point. And I was doing a bit of freelance. So I worked at, NPC, Studio AKA. I did a little bit of freelance in Finland at Troll VFX, lots of bits and pieces here and there. And then, we came to Vancouver. I went to work at Bronn. So we worked on The Willoughbys.
Yes. I actually was kind of going through your LinkedIn again, and I actually had a podcast with Wes Mundell.
Oh, cool.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. And a great, really interesting concept for The Willoughbys, but I loved the style. I think that was a lot of fun. Yeah. So we can talk more and more about that here as we kind of go, but I'm just kind of curious where, you know, you've been since then. So now, when you mentioned you were doing, was it freelance for some of these companies in, you mentioned NPC, was that over back in Europe?
Yeah, that was back in the UK.
So did you go back over there, or are you doing it remotely?
We went back. So we moved back from Montreal for about a year and a half to London.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I was working there on and off and doing the film at the same time.
Okay.
And then I think September 2017, I moved to Vancouver with Martin. And yeah, started work at Bronn. And then after Bronn, I was going to take a little gap, and then I ended up getting swept up into Superseed Studios.
Yep.
And working on Oddworld, which was pretty cool.
Jason Shum.
Yes.
One of our past instructors. I've had him on a podcast as well.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. And then that was just about as I just started there before the pandemic, but then the pandemic started to take hold. So I did some more stuff with them. I did I did Crash Bandicoot, It's About Time, a little bit on that.
Okay.
And then during the pandemic, went to Sony Imageworks.
They're in Vancouver?
Vancouver, yes. Yeah. So yeah, they're in Vancouver. So it was remote, even though the office was about 5 minutes from my house. So that was like the saddest thing about the missing that commute. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look over.
So I worked there on The Sea Beast. They just announced In Your Dreams, which I was on.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, they've only announced a little bit online, I think. A bit on Spider-Verse as well.
Yeah. Now, okay. So I just saw Across the Spider-Verse this weekend, or no, yesterday. What are we at? Today's Tuesday?
Yeah, you went and saw it yesterday. Took our kids to go see it. It was first day of summer.
Amazing.
Amazing, unreal, incredible. I mean, it's like how many adjectives can you get to put it in? It's really remarkable.
Yeah.
And maybe we can talk a little about that as well. I'd love to. it's hard to put it into words.
I know, right?
It was really something that they kind of took the first one and it was like, okay, hang on, hold my beer. You know, why we go, it was just really another level up, but still kept in with the same feel and vein of it, you know? So how long did you work on that one?
Actually, I was on that one in January for a few months. So I wasn't on it as long as some of the other animators.
Okay.
It was just between moving projects and things. And I felt very lucky to be able to even work on it for that.
To have got your hands on that, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Even so, like the amount of shots that, you know, you get through in that, because it's just so go, go, go. Uh-huh. You get a good feel for it very quickly.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that was a good fun. And then now I'm at Disney. So I just moved over to Disney. When was that now? April?
All right. Like, okay, so not that long here. Pretty recent. That's awesome.
Yeah, so they opened up in Vancouver.
Now, how long have they been open there?
I think just about a year maybe.
Okay.
I think.
So pretty new there with you being there too.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. How did that gig come about, if you don't mind me asking?
I think the applications came out in last July or something. So I applied then. And then I knew a few people that worked there too. So I studied at Anim Squad as well with Malcolm Pierce.
Yeah.
Who's head of he's like studio director, I think. And then there's a few other people I work with. Actually had people work on Cat and Moth that then had ended up there and were like, you've got to come. It's like the sort of startup feeling.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I put my work together. We had CBC to come out.
Yeah.
At that point. So I was getting all that stuff together. And it went from there came together.
Now, what kind of projects will you guys be working on there as well? Are you collaborating with the one here in Glendale, or is it separate projects, or how is that working?
Yeah, so it's going to be separate, at least from what I know. We're currently on they've announced the Moana TV series.
Oh, okay.
Thing. There's not much about it out. I think it's just that literally right now. And it's, gotcha. So it's a Disney Plus.
Very cool. All right. So you get your hands on some very cool characters then
right
away. Yeah,
it's very nice. Yeah.
Now, being that kind of startup feel though, how was it hitting the ground running there?
Yeah, actually, I really like that side of things. Like some of my fondest memories, apart from Cat and Moth, have been like the smaller studios where you can muscle in and help out and figure it out together. And so it has a little bit of that where we're all still kind of, everyone's new and it's all a fresh, you know, fresh team. So it's nice to all sort of be figuring out all the bits together, and it makes for more a collaborative atmosphere, I think.
Very cool. Yeah. All right. And then Martin's still at freelancing or at Superseed, or where's he at?
Yeah. So he's freelancing. He's a bit with Superseed, but doing some other bits as well. He's doing a lot on the work from home, and he
gotcha.
Yeah.
The only reason why I asked too is because I think it's so cool. Because so this has got to be 2010 when I did went through iAnimate. That's when I started. I think he was maybe the class right after. So I had, I think maybe shortly after that. Well, my brother took it even before that, you know. And then he worked with Martin at Superseed on the basketball one. So I just love how the industry works and working together and stuff like that. So it's just really cool. So,
there's so, I like from Martin's point of view, so many of his class, like your, that kind of time, that year, I guess, mm-hmm. those classes, so many people now I see all around different studios.
It's so cool. Funny.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Cat and Moth here. So I had a chance to watch it. Really, really cool. Neat look. Because I know you mentioned also that after L'Atelier, you started kind of working on this here. So it's been some time. How did this come about?
Originally, I was at university. And so it was like 2009, Nah, 8, 9, towards the end of university. And I was in that place where I felt like we were all like talking about, oh, we should make a film. I want to make a film, you know, all that sort of thing. And then I'd said it so many times, I was like, I should probably just make a thing. So at uni, I started like playing around with ideas, sort of animatics and some designs and stuff. And then I went into the industry, and obviously work is hard and stuff gets sidelined a little bit. So I was sort of tinkering with it here and there. And I ended up working with Amar Chandavadra, who he is like, well, he's one of my best friends now. But we at work, we were sort of thinking, oh, we could play with this idea I had for these characters on the side. And we were doing some little like experiments. He did some fur rendering stuff, and I was doing some design things. And we, yeah, I don't know, by I worked with him from, I don't know, 2012 or something to 2015. And eventually we were just like, okay, we should take this more seriously now. It's clearly stuck around. And yeah, that was kind of how it got rolling, and we just started to make it. Originally, we were very like, yeah, we can do it, the two of us, you know. And quite quickly realized we needed more people to help because we don't know all those aspects. And yeah, and it sort of grew from there.
That's what I basically was going to kind of ask as well. What were some of the surprises creating a short in production there? So that, you know, you've obviously been around this at even some really cool levels, but what was it that was still surprising making your own short?
Yeah, I think apart from realizing that we needed more people, there was a lot of aspects to it that I did not expect. More so, I guess maybe the people management side of things.
Okay.
Just because the nature of doing something for the first time, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So I was trying to take on all the burden, and I was trying to make sure that anybody that offered up their time or whatever it was to the project felt like at any point, you know, life happens, they can happily just disappear, it's fine, there's no hard feelings, it's all good. And likewise, if they want to put in more hours, that's helpful too, all that sort of thing. But I decided that at the beginning, I was like, right, I'll be the lead of everything so that no one has to have boring meetings and boring things, admin and all that stuff. But obviously that makes a massive bottleneck. And I went to do a talk with a bunch of other filmmakers at CTN, and we were chatting beforehand in the green room, and they were talking all about that they'd got leads and producers and all this stuff, and they delegated their work to them. And I was like, what? People want to do these things? Okay. And they just looked at me like, how do you not have that? Like, what, how are you even moving? So literally me and my producer after that talk went to the bar in the Marriott where CTN is,
Which I
and we were
miss
like,
CTN. I miss
yeah.
it.
And we were like, okay, who could we ask on the team that might be interested? There's obviously no pressure, but we'll offer it up. And we thought of someone for each department we had at the time, and actually all of those people were resounding yes please, like we'd love to be involved more. And that really took me by surprise. And then also the fact that it actually worked way better, like being able to give those people responsibility
Right, right.
and control over their discipline, you know.
Why do you think they were so responsive to wanting to join?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, in terms of the feedback I've got from them, I think they, in since I guess they really enjoyed being a part of it. At least that's what they told me. And they liked having, you know, it was a place to sort of experiment, I guess, a bit with
Okay.
like a style of not just the film, but a style of, I guess, if they want to do a bit more of leadership stuff or whatever it might be,
Right.
or collaboration. But that's just, I've only known that a little bit through conversations of talking to people.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, that's
But
kind of what the reason why I
yeah.
asked that is because it kind of gives people an opportunity to try a skill set that maybe they feel confident or comfortable enough in, but haven't had a whole lot of opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know what the reasons are behind it, but I noticed a, like through we used a platform Artella that used to exist. And I noticed a lot of women would approach the project. I didn't really think about it at the beginning, but and it wasn't anything like we were posting about trying to find diversity. It just seemed to happen. And I don't know if that was more because, like you said, like there's a chance to try something out and maybe it's not something they've been able to do, I don't know, professionally maybe
Yeah,
yet.
yeah. There's an animator that comes to my mind. Very, very talented animator, but he wanted to kind of try a little bit in storyboarding as well. So
Oh,
it's stuff
cool.
like that that you can kind of go, well, hey, yeah, I'd love to
Yeah,
jump in on something like
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like if someone wants to try a different discipline, then it's like, yeah, let's have at it and try it and see what happens. One of our riggers went into animation and actually now I think she's just fully in the animation like line of things. So
Gotcha.
yeah, it can really give people that
Yeah.
chance, I guess. But yeah, I was trying to keep it pretty open to whatever people felt like they wanted to do. Because it's their
Gotcha.
spare time, right? It's not,
Yeah.
I can't say anything. So I always had this thing where like if no one wanted to join, then we would just make it ourselves, obviously.
It would just take longer, that's all,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. Yeah. I was like, we'll finish it one day.
Now, where did the can you tell us a little about the story first?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So it was influenced by a kitten I had when I was 11, I think. And I used to hold her up. She would eat moths from around the lamp in my bedroom.
Okay.
And so that kind of image stuck with me for ages. And I was like, okay, I want to do something with this cat and this moth character thing. So that was kind of the stimulus for it. And then it all the sort of other themes within that were kind of just an interest in different artists. So MC Escher was pretty heavily an influence. The wallpaper in the room itself is tessellated cats,
Oh,
and
okay.
it's from an illustration my dad made in his 20s.
Oh, very cool.
And so that was kind of like a bit of a like jumping block, I guess. And then that bled into looking at Maurice Noble, who did a lot of the background paintings and things like that for I think Looney Tunes, and then trying to like merge all these kind of ideas of like illusion and tessellating shapes with that kind of Looney Tunes trope, I guess.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and they kind of came together. Oh, and a bit of Dr. Seuss as well, because
Okay,
I love
very
Dr.
nice.
Seuss.
Very nice. Well, it was a very cute style. Now, was it on twos at all, or did I miss?
So we did. We didn't pick a standard frame rate,
Okay.
frame exposure, I guess you say. What we decided to do is only move the characters when we really wanted to.
Okay.
So some shots they might be on like nines or eights or 12s or something.
Gotcha.
And some shots could be I don't know how many ones we did, but I think there's areas of ones. And then yeah. Twos, fours, yeah, it's kind of, I guess, between twos and eights is probably the most common.
Gotcha.
But yeah, we also rendered the characters only for the frames that they're moving
Oh, really? Okay. And then
to
just
try
hold it in
and,
composition or in a compositor.
yeah, exactly.
Gotcha,
So to
gotcha.
try and save a bit of
Oh,
render
render time for sure.
time. Yeah.
I've had my hand. I've been kind of a generalist before more animation here. So yeah, I've done some look development, a lot of lighting and rendering. But yeah, anytime you can shave off some time for rendering, that's a
Right.
bonus.
Yeah. It made it a little tricky because we had to keep track of like what shot was moving on what frames.
Yeah.
But I think in the end, it did save time. So it kind of worked out.
Now, some really cool 2D stuff in there as well. And I noticed that you had your hand in that. Is that correct?
Yes, I did a few bits and pieces
Okay.
around. But I'd say the majority was from the other animators.
Artist.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I can't even remember what bits I did now. It's great when you're in it, you're just like, go, okay, I'll do this bit, you do that bit, you
Yeah.
know. There was a French animator that did the first black and white 2D
Was that when it kind of goes against the background and alternates? Yeah, that really cool look.
He did a great job with that. Theo, and then we had I know Bruno did the big 2D sequence at towards the end, right at the
Okay.
end. So he did the whole thing.
Now, did each
He
artist use their own 2D package that they with preference, or did you guys use a specific one?
Yeah, more or less. Like for me, I had TV Paint,
Okay.
and I think a couple of the other artists did. But it was as long as we could plug it into the edit, it was free rein for what people wanted to use. The CG stuff was a bit obviously a bit more particular with Maya and
Right.
some of the fur plugins and things like that. But for 2D, yeah, as long as it we could.
Export back out
Was
and pull
yeah
it in.
exactly yeah then it was fine. And it's very hand-drawn style anyway, so it wasn't like we were relying on rig like 2D rigs or anything.
What'd you guys use for fur?
Fur, we used a plugin called Yeti from Peregrine Labs.
Yeah, okay, familiar with that.
They okay yeah they gave us a few licenses, which was really nice
Very
and
nice.
supported us throughout the whole project, luckily. So yeah, it was Emma's idea to go with them because basically we did a lot of research in, I guess, what would be the best way foot forward, I guess, for that stuff. And yeah, and luckily they were kind enough to help us out with that.
Very cool. Now, is that something unique in the pipeline that you experienced at all, or is the person who handled that one?
Yeah, I did not know much about that. There was a few bits and pieces where I could help a little bit towards when we were trying to render stuff out and troubleshooting and things. But yeah, definitely Emma was the king of that side of things. So yeah, he did it, and he did designed all the groom as well, like all
Nice.
the cats. Like we did a lot of meetings of like fur flow, especially when the cat's head's so big. And trying to get that feeling nice and the sort of cotton candy tail and like that.
The only reason why I ask is because, like I said, we've even our studio here with my brother, we've done some fur, we've done hair and things of that nature. And being in just an animation, it's you animate your shot, you ship it, and you don't even think about it on that kind of stuff. You see the render, and you're like, oh, that looks great. Until you do something like what you're doing here with production, where you're jumping into that, you can kind of start seeing where things can go a little funky, or trying to figure out how to manage it. And so yeah, it was a fun process, but it can be a little tricky. So I was just kind of curious if you kind of came across some of that.
There's a couple of little bits in there. There was a couple of tests we did on an animation test at the beginning where we moved away from having it simmed or moving with elements or anything. But because of the nature of it, like obviously when the character moves and we've got this sort of varied frame exposure, the fur is going to move a bit whether you've simmed it or not, right? So there was kind of accidentally this sort of happy thing where the fur would move and it would kind of look like stop motion because it's like someone's moved it. And we were like, cool, we're going to lean into this.
Keep going,
So that was really nice, like little discovery.
Very nice. Now, who came up with the design of the cat?
That was me.
Very nice. Really, really cute.
Thank you.
Easy to find someone to model what you had envisioned.
We had a few modelers help out over because of the length of the project and stuff, people dip in and out and all that sort of thing. So we had a few people help with Ditto, the cat, as
Is
we
that the
call her.
name, Ditto?
Yeah, we call her
Okay.
Ditto. And the interesting, it was definitely not easy because it's like she's basically meant to be three balls. Like you've got a head, her torso, and her
Torso.
tail. So that definitely makes it tricky with like the neck and trying to work that out with the groom and everything.
That's what I was wondering, because you got a lot more stretch in there, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like trying to keep that graphic as possible. And then we have the really thin tail with the massive ball on the end. So those kind of things were definitely the things that it was a back and forth between like getting the right amount of edge loops and things and getting that into rigging and seeing how it handles that.
It's kind of funny you mentioned the kind of three balls there. I remember doing a podcast Turbo, the movie from DreamWorks,
Oh,
and
yeah.
they're talking about the snail and stuff like that. And they said basically it's three balls, you know,
Oh,
and it's
cool.
just you're kind of bouncing it that way. So yeah, kind of
Yeah.
similar to what you're talking about there. You got your squash and stretch, and that's, you know, your
Yeah.
foundation for animation using that in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she has sort of flower sack type arms as well. Like we originally, I think we even tried a bit of anatomy, but we're just like, nah, we just keep her like simple. And yeah, and it's because as soon as you move her rig, that in some ways you're like, oh, it's already off model. Oh no, what have I done? What? How's her head chain shape? You know, just trying to like keep all that in balance. We also tr had a lot to do with like her eyes and her nose and her ears, be able to move a fair amount around her head for different camera angles. And
Really? Okay, kind of like
yeah,
Mickey Mouse having to.
a
Okay.
little, yeah. So that was really interesting with the fur as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So now that was just to keep the overall look that you wanted, or was it what was the purpose on that?
Yeah, it was to keep the graphic feel,
Okay.
because also because she's just got black dot eyes, her eye direction is very head or angle based.
Okay.
So, you know, otherwise she'd just be staring
You can lose
straight.
the eyes that way if
Yeah,
it, okay. That makes sense.
exactly. So, and when if we move the eyes and the nose too far without the ears, she starts to look a bit wonky. So
Okay.
having the freedom to be able to shape that really helped.
Very cool. Yeah, just I think it's just fun because again, a lot of stuff you don't have to even think about when you're just
Yeah,
animating.
exactly.
But you
Yeah.
get to appreciate it knowing though in your position.
Yeah. At when we were first designing, getting in the rig stage, we looked a lot at Peanuts, because that came out around the time we were starting to do all the getting the rig together and stuff. And yeah, that was a heavy influence looking at Snoopy and
Gotcha.
yeah.
Okay, so my lead right now, Ron Smith, was worked over at Blue Sky on that project, and I did a podcast with him. So this will be our 101st podcast with you. So that was the 99th podcast. So if you want to hear any more about kind of the Peanuts a little bit, yeah, check that one out, those who are listening. But yeah, he kind of mentioned that having to adjust things based upon the angle that they would have it in.
It was so fun to study all that stuff that came out there. We were looking heavily, there was the teaser trailer and stuff. I remember we were framing through it and trying to work out, and even the stuff like the fur, we really like the silhouettes of like little, like I guess Snoopy has a little bit of hair, and yeah, little bits like that, trying to how can we use that in a graphic way? The Looney Tune CG shorts as well.
From RealFX?
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
so.
I
Yeah,
think it was from
they.
them, yeah.
Yeah, we used them a little bit for reference for like the groom on their faces and things as well.
Okay. Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Now I think I tried to get a podcast in with you about this. This is probably sometime last year. I don't remember when.
Yes.
So now it wasn't just our schedules per se. It was a large part in regards to when this was going to be released and having to go through. So can you tell us a little bit about that process of now, working on this, get it released, and now what festivals, things of that nature?
Yeah, so we've wrapped in the it was August 2021, and I started to apply to festivals straight away. And our first one was that November, I think.
Okay.
And then basically we'd apply, depending on the festival, a lot of their schedules will come out a fair amount before the festival happens, especially if they're big or anything. So we were just applying to a lot. I basically my goal with the festival circuit was to be able to network with the film, try and meet more filmmakers, try and get more in the circle, I guess, and get inspired by other people and all that stuff. And yeah, so we just sort of start we just wrapped up the last we're just wrapping up the last couple of festivals now. And I did. I guess it was really hard because obviously us and the whole crew wanted to share the film straight away, but a lot of these festivals have rules where you can't be in the festival if it's been online or other factors that come into it. So it's hard to hold it close to our chest for this long. And I was like, yeah, maybe New Year we can just get it out. But there was a few other festivals we wanted it to get through and respect, obviously, their terms.
Guidelines, yeah.
Yeah,
So what
so.
is the pro and con of Okay, so I mean, okay, let me back that up. So the pro of not doing the festivals is that you can release it to the public. Hey, here's our project.
Yeah.
What is the positive or the pro going and holding that back and going through the festivals? What was your motive to do that?
Yeah, I think the networking was fantastic. Some of the festivals put on a really good setup, like being able to sort of speed meet with other filmmakers.
Okay.
And they might put on like special presentations for the filmmakers and things like that,
Very
like
cool.
to teach you about, I don't know, next steps or funding or whatever it might be. And it was just a really, I felt very much more connected to that side of the industry through it. And also you get the buzz of festival buzz where at the end of it you're like, I want to make another one now, you know. Well, you know, I wish I could apply for next year, but there's no way I could make another one in this time. It was really good. There's a lot of really well organized I guess organizations. That doesn't make sense, but yeah, these festivals have a lot of stuff behind them, promoting local people too if you're applying to a local festival. We went to Annecy in person
Oh, nice.
with the film. They selected it for their
Wow.
children's
I've
category,
never been there,
so
but I've seen pictures
yeah,
and it looks absolutely gorgeous.
I hadn't been, and I feel like that's maybe a crime considering I lived close to it before. But it was amazing, like the opportunity to meet other directors and not just animated films either. There was a mixture of stuff, but a lot of experimental animation too. And yeah, it was just a really lovely space, I think, for filmmakers
Neat
to get to,
experience then, huh?
yeah, to get to meet each other. And then it was a little bit of that, you don't know what you don't know, just wanted to try it, see what it was like, what's, another part of the process to sort of educate myself about. And it was also another thing, we had such an international crew that we were able to send some of the crew to their local festivals too with the
Nice.
film. So that was a really nice opportunity for people to be able to go and represent the film.
Yeah, very cool. Now, hearing this from you, is that something directing and filmmaking specifically is something that you would like to continue to go into, or just kind of, hey, in addition to animation, or I'd like to really kind of pursue this?
Yeah, I have the bug now. I definitely
Okay.
want to pursue it. It is very addictive. It's something about, I don't know, I just love that. I love collaboration anyway.
Okay.
And I think that being able to be a part of something and build it up with people. And we ended up with quite a community on Ketamoff. We'd meet, I think we met every other Sunday. And we had Slack and everything, obviously, and all that stuff. And it was just, I don't know, it was just a really nice thing to have built up, I
Collaborative
guess.
process, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I want more of that, I think.
Very cool. All
Yeah.
right. So do you have, I mean, not that you have to say anything specifically, but do you have any other ideas for shorts in your mind that you would like to eventually do? Or you're like, okay, now I want to kind of start spending more time doing this.
Yeah, so I've been, since I finished, I've sort of been on and off writing other things
Okay.
and thinking about other mediums and things like that. Nothing for me right now is like solidly, like spaghetti isn't solidly stuck on the wall yet. But yeah, there's a couple that sort of trying to become the front runners, I think, in my mind. But I feel like the festival circuit is pretty heavy going. I found, well, the amount of festivals we went to in the end, it can be quite heavy. So I think now the film is out, I'll have a bit more space to start seeing what feels like the next thing, I guess.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, maybe besides, as you mentioned, kind of delegating out some roles, what would have been something else now that, okay, hey, look, I have an idea for a short, I'm going to run with it. What would you have done differently as well?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think from the beginning, I would definitely not, like, I feel like the first half of making it, I was very like stressed and worried about everything.
Okay.
And the second half, I was like, yeah, we'll do it. It's okay. So I think I would try and start with a bit more of that feeling of, well, I feel like we kept them off all the way through. I knew we would finish it at some point, but I think I would start a bit more with of a relaxed feeling just generally, because I feel like stress doesn't make anything go faster, right? It doesn't do anything for anyone. And I think I would probably, I really tried with Catamoff to get the pre-production as solid as we could. I think I'd probably double that down again and try and get the story and everything even tighter before even beginning to think of the production side of things.
Okay.
And the other thing would probably get it to that point and hunt for funding, hunt for some kind of sponsorship or some backing, I think, to make it more of a like solid foundation for the whole project, I think.
Okay.
Try and get a bit of support through that way.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So you've got a, I don't know, a producer that will follow it, you know, will just, I don't know, have someone to
attach their name to it and be willing to,
yeah,
put a little money to it. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha. Now I noticed the Foundry was on there. They with Nuke, was it, or what?
Yeah, they were fantastic. They also they sponsored us and gave us a bunch of licenses for all of our compositing and lighters.
Nice.
So that was really amazing. With them in return, we basically gave them a bunch of our assets uncomposited so that they could use them for demos and things.
Oh, very cool.
So yeah, there's a few, if you go on their sites and things, there's a few demos where they've used Cat and Moth
around. Awesome. That's fantastic.
They were really great.
So you, and that's, I love kind of giving them a shout out for that. That's why you know, it's always neat to see when they're willing to kind of help out artists. So now it was composited in Nuke. You mentioned lighters. What was it rendered in?
We did Arnold.
Okay.
The Maya, yeah.
In Nuke or in Maya?
In Maya.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Now looking at kind of some of your history and background working at Netflix or Sony with Netflix, having worked on Across the Spider-Verse, CBs, things like that, what were some of the things that you took into the creation of this?
Oh, that's a very good question. What did I think there's a few things where we knew in production, you have obviously especially bigger studios, they rightly so have quite a rigid pipeline. Mm-hmm. Because they obviously, there's lots of people and they need to keep track of everything. I think on a smaller indie scale, it can be a bit more, I don't know, seat of your pants type thing, where you can be like, well, we can bypass this step in this shop because we need to sort of hack it together a bit because of whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And you can get a bit more loose in some of those areas, so you can get things through rather than them becoming hurdles and stopping the shot go through because it didn't meet a certain, I don't know, like a sort of admin criteria, I guess. So that kind of helps in some ways. It can also make, you know, things can get messy that way too. But it did, and also on that side of things, like everyone can talk to everyone. We had we used Slack to make sure that each department was free to be like, hey, I've got this asset ready. Hey, I've got this, whatever it might be. And I think that made things easier. They didn't have to go through a line of command or anything.
Right.
But again, smaller team, easier
to
manage that sort of thing. Yeah, I guess they're the kind of things. There'd be some stuff where people were developing things on the fly on the project to help composite it better. And then they'd be like, hey, I actually took this script I made and took it to work and used it to help my workflow. And I was like, cool. So there was kind of like, they had things that they'd learned from their experience that they could bring and also use it as a place to develop those.
Yeah. Yeah. About even having worked with artists and leads that you took in and wanted to reproduce, for lack of a better term? Hey, I really liked my lead and how he or she managed and did this. So now you're doing in this kind of position.
Yeah. It was always great to watch how people, because my hope is that at least in this context, was like, I want all these people to know way more than I do, because I don't know enough about any of these subjects to make the film elevate above whatever I know.
Gotcha.
So like trusting the lighting lead and the FX lead, you know, all the leads to input their thing, and then watching them, how each of them differently dealt with different lines of communication, different feedback. So one of our lighting lead made this amazing huge document about everything to do with how to, like, if you're going to join the project, how to get your scene set up, how to install all the licenses and everything. And it was just like step by step,
nice,
easy, like just follow. And I was like, that's great, it's so simple, but everything's there. If someone needed it later, they could go refer back to it. And,
absolutely. Yes. You're not having to retrain over and over and over.
Exactly. Again. Yeah. So that really helped. And I think we ended up doing that for our other departments.
Very nice.
That we had. So yeah, I love it when someone can bring that and you're like, oh yeah, that'd be so useful. Like you said, like at work or whatever, or in my life, you know,
which may be a little tougher in a bigger studio, as you mentioned, that sort of has their pipeline and you're like trying to, you know,
exactly
turn the Titanic.
Even Sony, when I joined Seabeast, it was pretty early on animation wise. So we had a lot of like references all over the place. So I tried to make, or I didn't try, I made a spreadsheet that just that you basically could like, this is where this reference is, this is where this reference is, and little things like that. Were influenced from this lead that had made this amazing document. And, you know, there's always little things you can help people with, so yeah, it's fun working those bits out.
Yeah. So it's little stuff like that you're able to implement in your project.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice. Now, what was some of the stuff that, as you worked on the Seabeast, as I mentioned, I had or maybe I didn't mention on that one, I actually did an interview with Zach Parrish.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that was a really cool podcast, really neat. Was there anything in that show that you really enjoyed in working on?
Oh, gosh, I loved working on that show. I had such a great experience. I don't know. Maisie is the main girl, and I really like getting shots with her. It was really great. Josh Beveridge as well, who was the anim soup, I think is his title. I just really like working with him. He has a very good way of giving notes and being encouraging, but not being too, you know, not sugarcoating anything.
Gotcha.
Just being direct, but not too harsh, I guess, in a way.
And that's kind of why I asked those questions too, because that's something that resonates with you. So I would imagine then that you would also then translate that into you.
Yes.
Your project,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I would spend a lot of time listening to how he word things. And I was like, I really, that skill is such a hard one to crack. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to try and analyze how he does that. So yeah, that was really good. And working with Chris Williams, he's such a lovely guy. Very open, but knows what he wants. And of course, Zach, and working with Zach was, yeah, you get a whole other, barrel of knowledge through Zach as well. And yeah, it was just a really good combination of things.
Was there anything as an artist that you felt like you really developed or learned in that show that kind of leveled you up, so to speak?
Gosh, a bit of everything, maybe.
Like, just dealing with people like that, they have a wealth of background. Yeah. And yeah,
I think being treated and talked to in that manner was such a eye-opener. I think felt like go to my shop, and it wasn't about it being a personal, oh, I've done bad, or I didn't do it the right way or anything. It didn't become personal notes, I guess. It became like, yeah, okay, this is what I got to do to get it how they want it for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another thing with making a film, is you start to see it from the directors and the makers' points of view.
Nice.
And you start thinking about your showreel or your, you know, that your one shot that is,
right.
You know, you start thinking about the movie as a whole. And it for me, it made it a happier experience, because you're not taking it home with you and being like, oh, I did a bad job today, I didn't animate it as well as I could have or something.
Uh-huh.
Because it's all about serving the movie. And I think in turn that can, you know, you'll also end up with stuff that will be great for your showreel anyway. So it kind of works twofold, I think.
Do you think that's a hard lesson to learn for animators?
Yeah, it took me like it's still days where I'm like, I'm sorry I didn't make everyone laugh or whatever. but it definitely was. It made a big difference in my day to day of like just mental health, I guess.
Yeah. Realizing that, I think for me, there's a project where I realized going into the dailies, not trying to get past notes. Like, yes. Oh yeah, I got it. You know, and like you're getting notes. No, okay. What's the feedback you got for me now?
Yeah, exactly.
And that was a very different change of mind there that really helped me as an artist.
Yeah. And I think, you know, depending on the experience of someone giving those notes, sometimes you have to like look through this. Josh used to say, what's the note behind the note?
Okay. Yeah.
And being able to like decipher what is it that they're, sometimes someone might try and solve something for you and that's their note is like, oh, maybe if you move the head this way or something, and really you've got to go back to your desk and go, why are they trying to move the head that way? Like what isn't being communicated? What I used to do is I'd move the head that way that they told me to and show it again. They'd be like, nah, maybe try the head this way. And you're like, I don't get it, but
I did exactly what you told me to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's times now where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to move the head a different way because I think it will communicate the idea better. And they won't have even noticed that I did it the opposite to whatever they said, but it will give them the right feeling, I guess.
What they were looking for, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that I felt very restricted before. And after that, I was like, oh, wait, this is much more freeing to be able to just worry about the communication of it.
When you go back to your desk, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, speaking of communication, that's one of the things that I've been trying to do better on because I've noticed it's bit me in the rear too many times when I don't. Is that something that you've found as well? Hey, look, if I don't understand this or what is the note behind the note, I got to speak up and ask rather than, hey, I'm just going to go back to my desk and hope.
Yes. Yeah, it's tricky as well. It depends on the studio, how much, if you're allowed to, some studios, you don't get to direct, to talk to the director like straight, you know.
Yeah.
You know, face-to-face or remotely or whatever. And also if you do have that time, but sometimes the dailies might be really fast or rushed and there's no time for questions. Blah, blah, blah. So then you obviously that's when you lean on your leads and your supervisor to be like, hey, this is what I thought it might be. Could you clarify these parts? But yeah, definitely asking questions. When I started at Sony, because I didn't really know anybody when I started there, I thought, and I was work from home. So everyone else had worked at Sony in person at that point.
Uh-huh.
But, and then moved to remote, but no one had really started as a new animator.
Oh man.
So I was like, right, I'm going to go in with no shame. They don't know me.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to say stupid things and hope it works out. So I was just like, I'm just going to, if it felt uncomfortable to ask questions, like, I've just got to ask it because otherwise I'm going to sit at home and pretend I know what I'm doing.
You're going to be the one who's stuck by yourself at home going, I should have asked that.
Exactly. Yeah. Like there's not like, there wasn't like a friend I knew of like, hey, can I ask you this thing? So it actually, you know, I feel like there's no bad questions. Like I feel like really everyone knows that new people or when someone's new to something, they know that they're learning and that they're getting used to stuff. And, you know, usually someone goes, oh, I didn't know the answer to that either.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I feel like communication, it's a hard thing because you can't hear, can't really hear yourself while you're in that moment.
Yeah.
But I think each experience you can take a little bit from and build on.
Absolutely. Now, what has been some of the experience that you've now dealt with maybe at Walt Disney at a new place like that? Has that been similar in regards to experience, things new? Or, hey, I've been at Sony, I've been at, you know, L'Atelier or MPC or something like that. I've kind of got my feet pretty grounded. Can you explain that a little bit?
I love a new thing. I think it's always exciting to sort of change things up, and I like to embrace whatever the, you know, throwing at us, I guess. I think, like I said earlier, the newness of it, the collaboration side of it is really fun because it's everyone has a strength in something, whether that's they're like good at helping technical things or they're good at helping like get everyone socializing and meeting, like bonding and all that stuff. But yeah, the structure of it is really exciting to me because it's there's no real gatekeeping through your shots. So you get issued your shot, you get to talk to the directors directly and ask your questions and things like that. And then your first pass, whatever that may be, you can, if you wish, send it straight to the director.
Wow.
You'll have that straight in dailies. There'll be no one to say, you can't show this. What are you doing? and then basically the director gets first impression of your, or everyone in the room gets first impression of this idea. You don't have to do it that way. You can take it to your lead, or they're called supervisors there. Uh-huh. You can also take it to rounds beforehand if you wish. But it's much more free flowing. Like they're trying to harbor the artist idea gets through at least to start with.
Interesting.
And then they'll build on that rather than it getting changed, you know, before
multiple
it even
times
gets
before.
To the, yeah. Yeah. So it's a nice, it's refreshing, I think. And I think it encourages people to try stuff. We've also the current directors we're working with are very much direction and story based. So if the direction and the story of the shot work, they're good. They're happy with it. They don't need to like tell you which nose to track and which elbow is popping and stuff like that.
Right.
It's all about if the idea is good, then yeah, you go and finish the shot sort of thing. So.
And I'm willing to bet, having worked in some of that kind of scenario, having that firsthand face-to-face with the director, you get a pretty good idea what he or she is looking for, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm still very new to what getting to know them and everything, but yeah, it definitely helps with getting there quicker, I think.
Yeah.
Because if you're somewhere where you never even see them, I've definitely worked at places where you don't even meet them. Like you're just getting secondhand, maybe notes on your emails or something, but like, okay, I guess this is the note, you know, I don't feel what they're going for.
Yeah.
And when you get to know someone and like, even if they're just not even necessarily giving notes, but they're chatting at the beginning of dailies or something a little bit, you get to know their personality a little bit and
yeah,
their sensibilities.
Right. Now what's the quota on something like this? If you don't mind me asking.
No, I think we're somewhere between 3 and 4 seconds a week. I think.
Really? Okay. Like that. That's all. I mean, that's typical feature there. So
yeah, they're trying to, it's basically, I think they're trying to match the original movie quality. So
okay.
They're trying to, yeah. Keep that all.
That's why I was asking. Cause I was curious if it's going, you know, directly to an episodic in that regards, if it's what your constraints are on that, but yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I'm assuming you've worked from a range of quota.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay, so pros and cons, obviously, you can kind of get through some shots faster. You can kind of be done with them here. Do you like working on this here where you can kind of dive into it and really sink your teeth in?
Yeah, I think starting out in commercials and things like that, beginning my career, I think was really helpful because you just have a variety of stuff and you're spending, well, I don't know, it could be a week or a couple of months on something and then you get onto the next thing and you can really work out like your strengths and weaknesses
and
the stuff you enjoy and don't enjoy pretty quickly. Like at Framestore, we were like, 1 week we're animating squirrels and the next week we're animating cars. And then the next, you know, it's like so polar opposite but really useful. But yeah, that's when, that's why I joined iAnimate I was like, okay, it's fun doing all this stuff, but I'm not getting the quality because there's never enough time in any of those
environments. Quality. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, okay, if I do iAnimate, it'll give me the time to like try a higher quality animation and try and work towards feature film.
Gotcha.
And now, yeah, I love it. I love having the time to like finesse like the muscles on the face and all that stuff. Like all the deep, like I love animating fingers and hands.
Oh, very cool.
And being able to have the time to like do those details is really nice. There's some days where I'm like, I don't even know how I used to be, you know, be able to do any higher quotas. But I think when you get like swapping back when I was doing a bit of stuff with Super Siege, you kind of, once you've been on the project for a little bit, your brain readjusts. Even like different frame rates, I found my brain would be like, for the first week or two, like, oh, 30 frames per second. And things like that.
That six
So
extra frames, huh?
yeah, I know. I don't know what, but it would like really throw all my timing.
That's funny.
So I guess if I did ever go back to something with a higher quota, I'm sure it'd be fine, but I do love being able to get in there. Oh, that's my cat, sorry.
Yeah.
Get in all the
Ditto.
details. Yeah.
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 Are there any particular shots that you gravitate towards? Action or subtle or humor? Is there anything that you kind of.
Yeah. I do like humor. Humor's good. Anything with hands, I really enjoy, like if they're holding something or using hands as like a means of subtext, like if they're doing I don't know, if they're doing like a rhythmic tap or something, and then they stop because they've seen something, and like getting building in that thought process it through them. I've done some. I was doing a shot last week where it was much more. It was a bit of both of that, but also some really intense mechanics where it's like every frame you're making it, like every drawing you're really designing. And I loved that. It was like, I felt like I was just doing lots of drawings, and it was
Very
really, I don't
cool.
know, very lovely. Yeah, I'd say they're my kind of go-tos for fake. Oh, and a bit of lip sync. So
I love lip sync. That's what I was going to
yeah,
say. I
lip
love lip
sync,
sync. There's just
right?
something about the way the mouth moves and circles and in and out and stuff and anticipates the next. Yeah.
So satisfying.
Now, just out of curiosity, what is your workflow? Does it, vary depending on what you're doing?
I think it can change a little bit depending on the shot. Like if maybe if it's a close-up shoulder up shot, I might veer towards more spline.
Okay.
I tend to stay on step for quite a while,
Okay.
really, I would say. I shoot for planning. I do a lot of thumbnails and notes and things like that, especially if there's dialogue, working out rhythms. And then I will usually gather some references. They might be like pictures, or they might be random videos from YouTube or whatever. They might be myself. And I kind of make this sort of mood board of stuff. And then I'll use my blocking to kind of piece all that planning together. And
Okay.
then usually I show the blocking as my sort of pass rather than showing lots of bits of reference and things, because
Okay.
I'll tend to use, oh, I like this thing, I'm going to take this like little clip, and I like this pose in this image, I'm going to use that. And I find that's really hard to like present to people, like,
Okay.
hey, I like this drawing, and I like this picture, and this is me at my on my holiday, and I really like this, you know. And then it's like
Like, make
so
sense of it.
confusing.
Yeah. Here's the decoder for it, the decoder ring. Yeah.
So I like to say like I make this mood board of stuff for, and for, it's usually just for me, and I'll have a folder of that. If something's at other studios, if something is very unclear, I might show them like a couple of one or two references maybe, just to like get a gauge instead of going straight into Maya. And then yeah, and then step blocking that out, working on the keys. I might leave. Sometimes I leave it in spline, but I'll just step through instead of scrubbing,
Okay.
depending on the shot. But then I usually break that down pretty far, like mostly on twos, I would say. And then depending on the action, like the shot I was working, the mechanics I was working on the other day, it was on ones, basically on stepped by the end, because I was just like doing every drawing, because it was such a tight frame range, and the character was moving a lot, so it was like, there's no way of showing like moving this along without going into those ones. So it's whatever it takes to show the idea, I
Gotcha.
guess. And then from there, I will spline. Usually what I used to call spline, my spline day, like holding my breath,
Okay.
where I just like, right, I'm gonna go from frame one to the end, and be like boop, 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 and spline all the way through. I generally spline in beats. So I'll take like, I don't know, one extreme to the other and spline that bit and
Okay.
work through until the end. And then once I've got a pass of that, I'll then go and polish through that. Now I don't call it holding my breath so much because it's not as painful. But
So that's actually what I was going to ask you here too. That's funny that you mentioned that it was not as painful. I was going to ask you, is there a process, part of the process that you feel like, man, I'm so glad I got past that hurdle, you know?
yeah, you
And
definitely
is and if so, what is that? And then is there other parts of the process that you still like, it's just, I still have to grit through it, you know?
Yeah, spline is still like not my favorite bit, but it's become, I think the more I've worked with, especially like Willoughby's and other shows where it is blocked, like it is on twos,
Yeah.
it really hones in your blocking because you're basically for the whole project, you're practicing blocking.
Yeah.
It's really good. So that helped a lot, blocking all those shots out. And I think that makes for me, if I get it down on twos, it means spline's pretty straightforward
Pretty
because
close, yeah.
yeah, because it's already, you're already pretty close. So it's less of a problem now. I'd say that's my least favorite bit.
Okay. Polish particular or transitioning to.
Oh, from step to spline, I
Okay,
would
thank you.
say.
Yeah,
It's
that's
kind
what I was gonna
yeah,
make sure.
sorry, yeah. It's kind of that one of it just to me it feels like, okay, this is the day I'll do it. And either the day's either side, I'll enjoy a bit more.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, I
Very nice.
try and keep that bit of the process as short as possible.
And then, so maybe what was part of the process that you maybe it was a struggle for a while and then you kind of got through that? Was it developing your eye? Was it seeing things quicker and like, okay, I'm or maybe getting things bought off on their first pass quicker in your blocking? Was there anything that part of
Yeah.
the process that you developed,
I
I guess,
think,
to give people hope that like, oh yeah, so I struggled through this and now I feel much better here.
For that transition stuff, like I feel like it's very common. At least everyone I was studying with all also dislike that bit. And some people now just start in spine so that they don't have to even think about that
You're
transition
right.
bit. For me, it was definitely like I think Willoughby's made a big difference because there was at some point during production where someone was using the old like 2D timing spacing charts.
Okay.
You have them because he did 2D as well, so he kind of understood that side of things. So I started not using them to animate, but using them to analyze what I was animating and
Okay.
looking at my spacing and timing that way. And what I came to realize, like especially when you're presenting blocking on twos, but it's never going to be splined. I feel like actually it's a bit different to when you're blocking and it's going to be splined because when something's on twos, you're making it look presentable for your eye at that varied frame
Right,
exposure,
right.
whatever it is. As soon as you hit spline, even if it's on twos, it's adding an extra drawing, obviously, per one of those drawings. So
Yeah,
it kind
yeah.
of evens out your spacing and
Yep.
gets it more floaty. So I realized, like, in my actual blocking, either it's kind of a temporary pass where it's for display only, and I'm showing it as a like, this is the idea I'm going for.
Okay.
It's easy for the eye to watch it, even though it's on stepped. Or there's another version of blocking where it maybe is a le less slightly less easy to look at because you're really thinking about the spacing and how it's going to turn into spline, but maybe it's less presentable. So depending on how well I know the director or the supes or whatever, I might show like a more presentable version to start
Okay.
with and then tighten up that spacing in my stepped blocking afterwards when I know I don't have to show it at this moment in time. And then when you go to spline, the spacing is tighter
Yeah.
and makes more sense, and the transition is less soupy, I guess. Because that always blew my mind. I was like, it's on twos, how is it still soupy? And it's like, oh, my spacing's still even. It doesn't make any, it's not making a whole lot of difference. So yeah, that's when I started to tighten up the spacing that side, and that made a big difference.
Very cool. The project I'm on right now, it's on twos. And I absolutely love it because I love the look and stuff, but I'm curious to see what happens when I have to adjust and go back to, So
I was always like, after Willoughby's, I was like, oh no, it's gonna happen.
yeah.
But it does. After a couple of weeks, you get back into the flow of it a bit, and for me anyway, I found it just, I was like, oh, it makes it much easier.
Gotcha.
It improved it a lot. And then if you go back onto a show where there is depth, you know more of what's like going on behind, you know, in the
curtain there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's good to know. That's very good to know. Well, India, I don't want to take any much more of your time here. We're at about an hour and I try to keep respectful for it, but I really appreciate getting to talk with you. You know, like I said, it's been a bit, looking forward to trying to get you in on this. And then the podcast we had earlier was a fun one, but it shared. And so it's really cool to get a one-on-one with you. So thank you so much for this time.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been so lovely chatting.
Yes. And please tell Martin we said hello.
Yes, I will do. Yes.
Awesome. All right. And with that, we are out.